so we can portion them.
Good morning, colleagues.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
Good.
And members of the public, to this, April 1st meeting of the House Committee on Higher Education Workforce Development. I know there's a rumor out there that we're going to be hearing the gun bills in this committee today, but that is a cruel April Fool's joke. We actually have a couple of public hearings and several work sessions to get through this morning, but I think we should be able to do that quite expeditiously. So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3149. Victoria, would you tell us what this bill is, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3149 establishes a task force on community college child care services, sunsets the task force on the date of convening of the 2015 regular session of the Legislative Assembly, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage.
Okay, thank you. Rep. Gorsuch, would you please talk to us about this bill?
All right. Well, good morning, Chair Denborough, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Chris Gorsuch, State Rep for House District 49, which includes Troutdale, Wood Village, Fairview, and Gresham. I'm glad to be here this morning to speak in support of House Bill 3149, which will create a task force to study the cost of providing child care services to students at community colleges and what funding sources for this would be in existence. The lack of adequate child care at our community colleges is a real problem. As an instructor at Mount Hood Community College, I see this every day. Parents who are unable to afford child care but not eligible for Head Start have very few options available to them. Some students are forced to bring their children to class with them. I have allowed this in my courses, especially if it's a day of an important exam, for instance, but not every instructor does that. And even then, having your child with you in your college classes does not necessarily create a beneficial environment for the parent or the child. I've also seen people that have their children sit out in the hallways, which is also not optimal. Parents who are working hard to improve their lives by attaining a degree face enough challenges without having to worry about how to take care of their child while in class. So I feel that they need our help, and thank you very much for the opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you, Rep. Gorsuch. Colleagues, any questions of the representative? We have a few people who testified, who have signed up to testify as well. Okay, thank
All
you.
Right. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm going to call up Tiffany Dollar, Kristen Dundorf, and Simone Chavez.
Good morning, Chair Denborough, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. For the record, my name is Tiffany Dollar, and I'll be speaking on behalf of the Oregon Student Association this morning. And as a reminder, I also serve as the student body president at Portland State University. I'm here today to encourage your yes vote on this bill. A yes vote is a vote for student parents. A child care task force for community colleges will address the needs of Oregon's ever-aging and diversifying student population. OUS participation of Oregon high school graduates peaked at 24% back in 2001 and has since declined to 19% according to the most recent fact book put out by OUS. If we hope to reach 40-40-20, we know we're going to not only have to increase that number of participation from high school students, but also do a better job of supporting our non-traditional students and Oregon families. At Portland State, in fall of 2012, more than 6,000 of our 23,170 undergraduate students were transfers from Oregon community colleges. This number includes me. After starting my college career at Port Wayne Community College, I graduated from Clackamas with my AAOT before transferring to PSU. My educational experience as a first-generation returning student has informed my view on this issue, and as student body president at Portland State University, I know the difference childcare can make in the life of an individual student and their ability to be successful in the classroom. Back in 1997, ASPSU founded our own child care center at PSU, proving that serving families at PSU has been a priority of ASPSU for decades. I'm proud to share with you all that PSU serves more Oregon Community College transfer students than any other OUS institution. The number of new undergraduates transferring from community colleges has nearly doubled since 2001. That's been a little bit faster pace than the system-wide average, according to the most recent fact book. Unfortunately, we see at other campuses that are more traditional, these numbers have remained pretty stagnant. For example, at U of O, they've hovered around the 850 mark, and even dipped lower and come back since then. I believe that this is because of the things that PSU is doing to support our non-traditional students, and I would like to move forward in supporting our community college students in the same way to make sure that they are on the pipeline to be able to transfer or graduate with their degrees. Even at PSU, though, we face limited resources, and we still have a long way to go in supporting students in need. Our on-campus childcare is in high demand at PSU. Of our two on-campus options, we have extensive waiting lists. At the Helen Gordon Child Development Center, we have a wait list of 323 student families. Our childcare center that I mentioned earlier has a wait list of 449 families. And our resource center for students with children is able to provide between 40 and 50 scholarships for off-campus childcare. If folks need that. But a recent survey in 2009 showed that PSU, of our total enrolled students, has 20% of our students are student parents. So that's a lot more than the 1,000 students who are receiving the, even on the waiting list for what we have here at PSU. So that shows that there's a really large need and a small amount of resources. I'd like to share an example of this with you all. A former colleague of mine at ASPSU is a student parent. He and his wife have three children, and after his wife took a full-time job with a local school district, they had difficulty finding affordable child care for their youngest. This meant he had to leave his job at ASPSU because it was cheaper for him to leave a paying job than it would have been for him to provide child care during those hours. This story plays out in various iterations every term at community colleges and universities across the state. Today, we're also submitting student testimony from a student parent who cannot be here this morning because his family is continuing to struggle with finding child care, as well as a success story from a student whose mother's college experience, in which she benefited from the Student Parent Child Care Fund, paved the way for him to attend college. Please take the first step in solving this problem by voting yes today. Students and community colleges are most likely to be the access points for student parents. With dwindling resources, it is imperative that we have a task force evaluate how best to address an obvious need that we have, and with the limited funding options, we see a task force as a way to really focus and see how we can best use the resources that we do have. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify this morning. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Tiffany. We'll hold our questions till we hear the rest of the panel. Okay. Thanks, Kristen.
Chair Dumbro, members of the committee, my name is Kristen Dundorf, and I'm faculty department chair for early education and family studies at Portland Community College, and I'm here to speak in support of House Bill 3149. We at Portland Community College are very lucky in many ways to have a child development center on campus. My colleague Simone will be talking a little bit about accessibility within that child development center. The early education program at Portland Community College is one of two nationally accredited associate degrees on the West Coast. We share that with Southwestern Oregon Community College. And a critical component of a high-quality early education program, early learning program, is a lab placement where students have an opportunity to work with directly with young children and families and work in the context of their faculty and mentor teachers in improving their practice. I believe that House Bill 3149, in seeking creative ways to fund childcare on community college campuses, also works to support the governor's early learning initiatives. In that, the governor is interested in increasing the quality of training and education for practitioners in the early education, early learning field. It is a very important component of an associate degree program in early education to have that actual lab school experience. What we know from our own Dr. Bobby Weber, who works very carefully with the Early Learning Council, is that the relationship-based professional development or coaching that happens in lab schools is really what produces change, real practice change for early learning practitioners. My colleagues at other community colleges, smaller community colleges, have a great deal of difficulty establishing and maintaining their child development centers. These are expensive operations for colleges to run, and I believe that House Bill 3149 in creating that task force will be effective in finding some creative funding solutions for providing those vital lab school experiences, and I am happy to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Dembro and Committee. Simone Chavez, and I am the director at the Child Development Center at PCC, and I am here to speak in support of House Bill 3149 as well. And like Kristen mentioned, we actually have a lab school at PCC that allows students to have childcare, but we are limited in the number of spaces that we have. We also have extensive waiting lists. We have ongoing, students trying to problem solve with them about what other child care facilities they can outreach to, because we can't provide that on campus for them in the numbers that we need. And we have ongoing problems with access. You know, are students who really need this care able to access it and afford it? What kinds of support do we have for them to be able to afford it? And so I think that this task force would be really important, looking at those funding sources. How can we provide more access to the people who really need it, you know, so that it doesn't just become something that is for faculty and staff, you know, to have children where they know 2 years ahead of time that that's what their plan is, but we have students walking in saying, I'm signing up tomorrow, and I really need this in order to be able to get there and to get to class. And when there's waiting lists that are 1-2 years out, some of these students don't know that far ahead of time. You know, they need to be able to access the resources now. So that's another piece I think that'll be really important to look at, is how to have that availability to them. We have, we are funded, and yet we all have constant struggles with where that funding is going to come from. Like Kristen said, it's an expensive program to run, and especially in the lab format, but it's really important for the students to be able to have that access on campus.
Thank you all. Questions, colleagues? Rick Gallegos.
Yeah, I just would want to share. I appreciate the testimony and certainly support the concept. My university, University of Portland, a private school, I mean, it took decades to ever get a child care program. And the main obstacles, at least that were reported to be the main obstacles, were finance. I mean, it was around facilities to house the program, and then also insurance. Insurance, I guess, is pretty high for these kinds of programs. But certainly, I think it's a great concept and would help us to get to our educational goals for the state. And, you know, I also think I was always amazed at single parents who somehow managed to go to school, and I just think this is a great resource for that. Thank you.
Yes, Rep. Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here. I was particularly impressed with input from Portland Community College. We have so few advocates here in the building for that college. And
Especially in the committee.
But you two probably also are candidates for this task force should this pass. But what I'd like to ask is, can you say just a little more from your view, what creative paths are there for funding in your mind? I mean, I know that's the whole job of the task force, but I thought you might say a little more about where we find that money.
As if we did the task force already, right?
Kristen Dendorf. What we know about funding childcare is that it is a very complicated thing requiring a great deal of creativity. The goal is for parents to spend about 10% of their income on childcare expenses, and that is a goal that is attainable for a very, very small portion of parents. Most parents are paying 25%, sometimes up to 50% of their family income just on childcare. And as a result, the sort of models that are looked at often involve, you know, where are those other sources of funding coming from? Are they coming from some sort of public investment, linking up with some of the publicly funded programs that are available, like Oregon Pre-Kindergarten, doing some wraparound kinds of care along with that? I know Representative Gorsuch talked about his college having Head Start, which is a wonderful federally funded program, but it is a 3.5-hour program for which parents must meet the Head Start requirements. So typically, publicly funded programs are not going to be your only answer in trying to create these sort of linkages and partnerships. There has been talked about, you know, the in a way borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. So for instance, if you have children in high quality care settings, they are more likely to become gainfully employed in the area industries when they become graduates of colleges. So can you seek funding from some of those large industries that are in the area, those large employers whose, you know, parents, you know, are now in college, will become employees of those institutions. And further, some even more creative funding that we know that when children are in high quality care, they are less likely to tax other public funding sources. So for instance, needing employment-related daycare themselves, engaging in some, you know, the criminal justice system, and so on. So, but those models are extremely complicated. So, but it does require a great deal of creative thinking in order to make that funding possible. Right now, PCC ponies up how much, even with the tuition of parents.
What are you asking?
How much PCC as an institution meets the tuition that parents provide.
I don't know what it is exactly.
It's close to 50%.
Yeah.
It's close to 50%.
And I mean, and we sort of use as many resources as possible to balance all that out, you know, whether it be we use the USDA food program and grants, the C-Campus grant that we're now seeking again to be able to provide, you know, different ways. We use the Pell grants, all these ways that parents can qualify for different programs in order to be able to reduce that amount that they have to spend in order to have that, but still maintain the quality that we want.
Rep. Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Simone, I don't want to put words in your mouth, and you may not know about other programs, but as much as you can speak to it, I'd like for you to. I kind of got the impression that your program is weighted a little more toward faculty and staff needs, or do you know a percentage between faculty and staff and students?
You know, it isn't, and we've made an effort over the years to limit the numbers because it's sort of open to whoever, first come, first serve kind of thing, and again, wait lists and that stuff. But what I have found in looking at it is that who knows a year or two ahead of time that they're going to need that space are faculty and staff that have their life a little bit more. You know, it's not the single parent that comes in and goes, oh my God, I can sign up for this class, but I need childcare. So we've actually in the past limited spaces to faculty and staff to like 10%. We're looking at whether that's the best practice or not right now in our procedures, but we have limited those numbers in order to still maintain availability to students so that they are at 80-90%.
Another question?
Yes, Vice Chair Huffman.
Thank you. In your program or others out there, do you know, is there a student participation model where students can offset any cost or help in assisting the program by being one of the providers?
Not in our program, partly because we are a lab program as well, so we have student practicum students in the lab as already.
Okay.
So with the number of students that we have in the lab, that's not an option at this point.
I do know that at Clark College in Washington, they have a parent participation requirement, and it does come with actual credit, but that credit is paid for by the state. And so it is a model that could be successful, but again, here in Oregon, it would require parents to pay additional tuition in order to do that work requirement.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
And I want to go back to the Head Start piece. One thing that we find is, you know, Mount Hood has it's only 2 years old. We have a Head Start program, building the whole thing. But 90% of it is the Head Start program, and then 10% is the early childhood piece. But the big problem is that students get very frustrated because they'll say, well, wait a minute, there's a child care facility on the campus, but they don't qualify for Head Start, and so they can't use it. And so that adds an additional problem within the system. I've had students that said, I told them I'd pay whatever they wanted just so I could have my child there, and they said, sorry, it doesn't work that way. So that's another problem.
And we are actually doing that at Cascade. Our new facility at Cascade will be Head Start. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Rep. Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to be sensitive to how times have changed. You know, my friend Representative Gallegos was referring to his college, and my college, Warner Pacific, back in the day, my parents looked at the college as child care. But
when you were a student?
yeah, that's what I mean.
But what I wanted to ask you, Mr. Chair, is in your opinion, when we have this subsequent referral, are we talking because of the cost of a task force, or are we talking about the costs associated with what they might come up with?
No, it's strictly because of the cost of the task force. Okay. All task force bills have subsequent referrals. Let me jump in and say how pleased I am that you brought this bill to us, Rep. Gorsuch. This is an issue that I know from my experience, both personal and professional, is a huge one for students at community colleges and elsewhere. I don't know if you know, I started teaching at Cascade campus over 30 years ago when my daughter was 2 years old. And at that time, the early childhood program was co-located at Sylvania campus and Cascade campus, and they had a site at Cascade where my daughter was able to go. And just the benefit of having her in child care right next to where I was working, and my ability to, you know, go if anything came up, I could just go right there and deal with her, that gave me a kind of relief and peace of mind that I know most students are not able to have, and it's you know a huge distraction. So I know there are certainly I assume the task force will explore options for off-site locations, and they'll be necessary to meet the needs of all students. But you know, the more you can find a location on campus, even if it's not part of a formal program, I would really encourage that. And I would also, following up on the former Rep. Greenlick, I'm sorry, Vice Chair Huffman, his point about Vice Chair Huffman's point.
It's April Fool, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. About having parents serve as workers in a cooperative venture. I think that is a model that, you know, if your insurance can allow, you know, I would really encourage you to pursue that as well. When I was a graduate student, my wife and I were part of a co-op that had a house on campus, and it we each had to work 10 hours a week as part of the co-op, but it was virtually free as a result. I think it cost us $25 a month. Times have changed. But, you know, and you know, I think that is a model worth pursuing. But it seems as if, as far as programs on campus go, the two big obstacles are those that Rep. Gallegos mentioned, I think the insurance and the just the space. Would that be fair to say? That those are, I mean, is it the actual cost of the program in terms of staff costs? You know, could that be met through students themselves putting in hours, or is the real expense?
Yeah, and we used to actually have the practicum students be part of the ratio, and that actually changed because of, well, you can maybe speak to that more why, but they actually were taken out of the ratio so that there had to be staff there in addition to the practicum students. So that's changed over the years.
Mm-hmm. It is difficult when you have student tuition-paying students who are covering ratio. Ratio means that they have responsibility for the supervision of children, and students are not always the most reliable of, in a way, quasi-employees. And so as a result, we took them out of the ratio. Just we literally have students, practicum one students, who walk in and they have scarcely talked to a child before. Mm-hmm. And so really there, we are a learning program. We are there to help them acquire those skills, but it does mean that at those beginning stages, they are not competent to take on that supervisory role.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's complicated with the lab program in that essentially we're supposed to be modeling best practices, you know, and then having, you know, a variety of people in there, you know, it's a constant training thing, basically. Mm-hmm.
Well, the program that we were part of when I was in grad school, this co-op, there were no professionals. It was parents modeling for other parents. And I will say that's where I learned how to be a parent, you know, from those who had had kids longer than I had. I learned a lot from that experience. And I think there is that benefit as well in helping teach, you know, non-professionals mm-hmm. how to be good parents. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming down today. We really appreciate it. And we will see that this bill goes to a good place.
Thank you.
Thank you. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3149, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3275. Victoria, this seems like another Gorsuch bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3275 establishes a task force on community college facilities, sunsets the task force on date of convening of 2015 regular session of Legislative Assembly, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Rep. Gorsuch, why don't you tell us about this task force?
Okay. Yes, Representative Fagan referred to me as the king of task forces the other day, so we want to be prudent with our money, folks. Good morning again, Chair Dambrow, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Chris Gorsuch, State Rep for House District 49, which includes the cities of Troutdale, Wood Village, Fairview, and Gresham. I'm glad to be here this morning to speak in support of House Bill 3275, which will create a task force to study and establish a plan for prioritizing and funding deferred maintenance projects for community colleges. The facilities at many of our community colleges are degrading rapidly, frequently due to a lack of funding. Our students are going to school in buildings that are literally falling apart. At Mount Hood Community College, where I teach, I know of numerous maintenance projects that have been deferred for many years. And this is not a problem confined to one or two campuses, but affects campuses across the state. While some schools are able to pass levies that give them the ability to fund these projects, many of our schools are in communities that do not have that same ability due to the economic hardships the community faces. This task force would help create a plan that would not only identify funding for these deferred maintenance projects, but prioritize them based on need. If we want our students to go to get the education they deserve, I believe we need to provide them with the facilities to do so. So thank you very much for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you, of course, sir.
Official.
Questions, colleagues?
Not that one.
Yes, Rep. Gillian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gorsuch, is it?
Yeah, it is, yes. Thank you, Rep. Gilney.
You know, I'm glad you're in the building. I don't want you to run out of funds. I would suggest if you're going to do this on two sides. And then you'll save a lot of...
Thank you.
I didn't realize you were so environmentally aware. That's
well,
excellent. A lot of people don't realize.
I know Representative Wisnet doesn't usually know that. But.
Thank you, colleagues. Rep. Gorsuch, the focus of your bill is on deferred maintenance
yes.
as opposed to new construction. Is that
That's
right?
That's correct.
And can you talk to that a little bit? You know, we have a process for new construction, and the Community College Association brings the colleges together, and they rank order priorities. But this is sort of a different animal that you're looking at, right?
Right. I think that whether it's, well, you can look at the higher ed system in general. I think we do a fairly good job of focusing on the needs that we have for new buildings. But frequently, and I think it's true of K-12 as well, that we kind of lack funding for repair and upgrades. At Mount Hood, for instance, I think the last time we passed a levy was 1976. And so we've really had to, any funding that we've done to repair things, we had to do a major electrical upgrade for fear that the system would explode, actually. About a year and a half ago, we had to take out bonding capacity for that, I believe is how we paid for it. And we have had a number of problems with leaking roofs and inadequate infrastructure, all sorts of problems that we just haven't been able to pay for out of the general fund. So, and in talking and looking at other schools around the state, some of them are in similar circumstance. So this is definitely how do we extend the life of our buildings? How do we, you know, make the most out of what we already have rather than losing it to decay?
I actually have a serious question. I know I would hesitate if I was just calling.
All right, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr.
Yeah. I'll take my chance.
I remember as an intern at the Lilly Endowment years ago back in Indianapolis, they were funding lots of capital projects.
Right.
And it was always, you know, something exciting and new, and you wanted to be the first funder on something. And this president, I can't remember the name of the college, wrote an article that they circulated, and the title of the article was, "Endow My Air Conditioner, Please." And he went into depth about how their infrastructure was crumbling. I guess one of my questions is how, I mean, I think that every president and board chair, whether you're private or public, would understand very well the problem that you're shedding a light on. How do they feel about this bill, in your opinion? Is it our role to say you need to prioritize this, or is this a joint effort, so to speak?
I think this would be a joint effort. I've talked to my president, for instance, and he is, like I think all of the community college presidents, interested in collaboration and working together to sort things out. So I would see it not as the state saying you will, but being more of a partner in aiding that in happening.
Thank you.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for bringing the bill. And we all know that there's a lot of deferred committee I co-chaired last session. We were looking at state buildings and the deferred maintenance on state buildings. You know, we have a policy that two-thirds of the homes in Oregon are homeowners associations, and some of those homeowner associations are required by law to put aside deferred maintenance for capital improvements and things like that. And the question to you, I guess, Representative, really it takes responsibility from the leadership of the community colleges to set aside money, and it would help if the governor's and the co-chair's budget had $500 million for community colleges instead of $400, wouldn't you agree?
That's true. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. No, I think, yeah.
That isn't,
yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head.
Pay some taxes and get that extra $100
million. Uh-oh. Oh, my. Mm-hmm. I'll be under the table until you guys are done.
Well, however we can do it, I do think it's important. I think you're spot on, Representative. The challenge is that deferred maintenance comes out of operation budgets. And so when schools see their funding being reduced in real dollars each year and they need to keep programs up, they tend to tap those deferred maintenance dollars. It's, you know, it's a, what do you do?
Right after the library, right?
Yeah, the library goes pretty quickly.
I would say that, as Rep. Gilliam pointed out, it's really easy to be excited about endowing a new building or some really new, you know, new program. It's not so exciting to say, oh, here's some money for an air conditioner. So I think that's part of the problem, too.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And, of course, deferred maintenance is jobs,
right?
Right? And they tend to be local jobs because they're smaller projects. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
We do have someone to speak to this bill. It is John Wyckoff himself, please.
Well, I think he's playing himself today.
Yeah, he is.
You're welcome.
Chair Denver, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, I'm John Wyckoff, Legislative Director for the Oregon Community College Association. I just wanted to make a few brief comments about House Bill 3275, and I thought I would just talk a little bit about what the process is that the colleges currently use for assessing deferred or for accessing capital projects, which include deferred maintenance, and that has been working reasonably well for the colleges since 2005. And in 2005, the colleges or prior came together and decided that they were going to come up with a unified capital list that all of the through a process of blind ranking, where presidents from the colleges through CCWD will look at the projects and assess them based on need and rank them on a priority list. And then the key point of that is that the colleges all agree to advocate for the list, that we don't have colleges that advocate against a project or try to get their project higher on the priority list, that we have a priority list and colleges stick to the list, and if we don't get all the way down the list through one session, your project goes up to the next to the top for the next session, and that's essentially how it has worked. Looking at how each project would affect local needs, whether it's to put people in jobs or whatever needs that the campus would have. And so there already is, and I think that would be sort of a mirror process to what this is in this task force, a ranking process. I do think one of the pieces that I think that that Representative Gorsuch really brings attention to is for many of the districts, it is much more difficult to find that local match. And in larger districts with a tax base that makes it easier to do so, there are definitely have been challenges for some of the districts where that is an issue. And there, I think this legislation has a piece that looks at things like maybe a possibility of a low-cost loan program. Because really there, I'm not sure at this point it's a point of process or prioritization. They can use capital money for deferred maintenance projects as a part of another project or as a part of a whole project. But it's getting that local match, I think, for a lot of the colleges that can be difficult. And for those colleges, we've had, where they'll have to use certificates of participation or use operating dollars, and they sort of end up in a catch-22 from the Ways and Means folks, where if they're using operating dollars, that's sort of frowned on to use for the local match. But if they don't have a local match, they can't really use the money they're given. So it really does put them in a catch-22, which is probably more of a constitutional issue and somewhat of a political issue from the direction that we're getting from Ways and Means than an issue maybe of prioritization, I think. But we do really appreciate the sort of bringing attention to this issue, because I think especially for some of the districts where these matching funds can be difficult, this can create challenges, and we appreciate bringing that forward. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Colleagues, any questions for Mr. Wyckoff? Okay, thank you, John.
Thanks.
Great. Okay, so with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3275. Colleagues, we have four bills to be worked today. The first is the bill that we almost had a vote on last week and then reconsidered. And before I open that work session, I just want to say that I'm really pleased with the way that worked out, and that we're able to stop something in time and make the changes and be productive as a committee. I think the changes that were made make this a better bill, make it the right bill, and I appreciate your help with that. So with that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2970. This is the bill that has to do with creating the new engineering transfer degree or having the HEC work on that. And we need to do some officialese before we can actually vote on the bill. So Vice Chair Huffman.
Chair Dembrough, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2970.
Okay, Vice Chair Huffman moves that the rules be suspended in order to reconsider the vote by which the Dash 1 amendments were adopted. This motion is not debatable. Anyone have any objection to this reconsideration? Seeing none, we will reconsider. Vice Chair Huffman.
Chair Dembrough, I move to reconsider the vote by which the Dash 1 amendments dated March 12, 2013 were adopted.
Okay, Vice Chair Huffman moves to reconsider the vote by which the Dash 1 amendments were adopted. Any discussion? Any objection? Okay, that motion passes. Vice Chair Huffman.
Chair Dembrough, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated March 28, 2013.
Vice Chair Huffman moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated March 28, 2013. And colleagues, you have these amendments before you. Just in a nutshell, had a may that became a must, and then we made it a may again. Now it moves it back to being a must as requested. And a little rewording just to allow the agency to entertain multiple ways of getting at the right ends. I think that, as I said, I think this gets us where we need to go. Any questions or comments on this?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Can I ask why we took business out of it?
Because there already is a business degree.
That's why.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion, is there any objection to our adopting these Dash 2 amendments? Seeing none, they are adopted. Vice Chair Huffman.
Chair Dembrough, I move House Bill 2970 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Huffman moves House Bill 2970 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Okay, is there any objection to this motion? Okay, seeing none, the motion passes.
Consent calendar?
Not at this point.
No.
Too messy.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Carrier. So we have to go back and reseed all of what we just did and have a new motion.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do it in advance if we want to put it on the consent calendar.
That's not what my committee
is. Well, you never go by the rules.
What? I will carry this bill, colleagues. I'm happy to explain this to the.
Did I see your hand go up?
What the issue is?
Yeah. Well, we have to amend the motion and have the consent calendar in the motion.
Yes. We have a motion for putting something on the consent
Mr.
calendar.
Chair?
That has to be the original motion, or we have to go back and redo what we just did and put it on the consent calendar.
Mr. Chair, I think that this, I want to show that I want this to happen. This was one of the, I was one of the ones commenting, sending it back. We got to do this and quit talking about it. So I would appreciate the chair making a couple of comments on the floor.
Mm-hmm. I got a long speech.
Okay. I want a commitment from every member of this committee to speak to this bill on the floor. Can we have that?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
I'm with you.
Speak in favor.
Okay, colleagues. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2970. and open a work session on House Bill 2979. This is the Common Course number one, is that right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay, so Vice Chair Hoffman, you want to make a motion?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Chair Denborough, I move House Bill 2979 to the floor with the due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Vice Chair Huffman moves House Bill 2979 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. So, colleagues, you can see that we were able to get that fiscal removed, the subsequent referral removed.
Victoria.
This is the bill that asked the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission through the CCWD and OUS to look at those lower division courses to see to what extent we still have Common Course numbering and whether or not we need to take further action to bring the courses into alignment. Any discussion of this?
Quick question, Rep. Gillian. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you say just a word about how you removed that fiscal?
There was a misunderstanding, a misreading of the bill initially, I think, where it seemed to the agencies that what we were asking them to do was to, you know, bring all the faculty together and do, you know, bring everything into Common Course alignment, which, you know, depending on, this may be a very small problem, it may be a very large problem. If it's a very large problem, then I think we're going to want to attack it. And to do it right, that could cost money. But that's not where we are at this point. We're initially assessing, you know, let's see. This was an effort that began, I think, sometime in the 90s or early 2000s to bring our courses into better alignment so that a student could more easily transfer from college to college or college to university, university to university. There's a sense that over the years the colleges have drifted away from that. We need to see how true that is, and if it is, then do something about it.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
What if there is no HEC next year?
Why would there be no HEC?
We're dealing with higher ed governance. So. Mm-hmm. Would that be the group, not the higher ed coordinating division or whatever is going to be the new governmental agency? That's
well, the whatever, there'll be a board. And, you know, I don't think anyone's talking about doing away with the higher ed coordinating commission. If that's a concern, if it goes away, then
somebody else
will have to do it. That's true from, you know, we're going to be passing a lot of bills this year where a different entity might have to do it.
That's exciting. Yeah, that's what I was leading up to. Mm-hmm. So somebody will put it back together.
This committee will. Rep. Greenlee.
Oh, good. Now we'll go back to 8 o'clock.
Okay.
7:30.
All right, seeing no further discussion. Is there any objection to our passing House Bill 2979? Okay, seeing none, the motion passes. Who would like to carry this bill?
Rep. Johnson. What's the committee count on the bill that goes on?
What is the committee count?
Yeah, I mean, is it taking into account that there's not everybody here, even though we do a roll call?
I think we're all here.
It files.
Everybody here?
Are we missing anybody?
Anyway.
Yeah, Parker's here.
Representative.
Yeah.
It was a rough weekend.
That's right.
Okay. So with that, I'll close this work session. Rep. Johnson will carry. I'm going to close this work session on House Bill 2979. And I will open a work session on House Bill 3296. Vice Chair Huffman.
Chair Denborough, I move to adopt the dash two amendments dated March 14th, 2013.
We carry that one, sir.
Rep. Huffman moves the dash two amendments dated March 14th, 2013. Victoria, what are these amendments?
Actually, Mr. Donovan is here if you would like to address them.
Thanks, Phil. Colleagues, this is the athlete agent bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Phil Donovan here on behalf of the University of Oregon. Simply, the dash two amendments provided clarity about where written notice is supposed to be sent. So if you were to look at page two. I was just looking at it, but there's too many pages. Basically, it's saying it's got to go, yeah, I believe that's right. The principal of an educational institution, so if you're line 20, if they don't have a principal, then it would go to the next person up, and it basically provides great clarity as to where the written notification is supposed to be sent. And with the university, it would go to the athletic director, to the president, so on and so forth.
Great. Mm-hmm. Any questions, colleagues? This is to make sure, in the words of Representative Barnhart, that the agent doesn't notify the custodian and that he is the sum of the responsibility. Okay, thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
Okay, colleagues, any further discussion of the dash two amendments? All right, seeing none. Any objection to our adopting the amendments? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted. Vice Chair Huffman.
Chair Denborough, I move House Bill 3296 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Huffman moves House Bill 3296 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, colleagues? Yes, Rep. Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to say that parts of the bill or the motivation behind the bill, I understand. I think that we should be very careful about this relationship with our student athletes. I was extremely disappointed during the discussion. There was no mention of the responsibility on the part of particularly NCAA universities in this whole big money, big business athlete situation that our country finds itself in and what we find ourselves in higher education in Oregon. I don't know that by mentioning that or by addressing their responsibility, by that I mean universities and athletic departments, that this bill would be any better. But I do want to say on record how disappointed I am, because I believe they do bear a huge responsibility for the pressure cooker and for the high-stakes game that we play, pardon the pun, with these sports. And I heard nothing, maybe my colleagues will disagree, but I heard nothing about the responsibility that the universities have in these issues, and that disappointed me very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Rep. Gilliam. And if you'd like, we can consider having an informational hearing on the subject of sports in our higher education system. That might make for a very interesting set of conversations.
I appreciate that.
Any colleagues, any further discussion? Seeing none, colleagues, is there any objection to this bill? Okay, seeing none, the motion passes. And was it Barnhart? Was the,
Yes.
Yes, okay, we'll assign Rep. Barnhart to carry this bill. Okay, so with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 3296. And open a work session on House Bill 3392. And this is the Tuition Trust Fund Bill, right?
Yes.
Vice Chair Huffman.
Please. Chair Denborough, I move House Bill 3392 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Huffman moves House Bill 3392 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Vice Chair Huffman, do you want to speak to your bill?
Good bill should pass.
Okay. Anyone want to disagree with that? Okay, seeing no further discussion, is there any objection to our passing this bill? Okay, then the bill is passed. Okay, colleagues, I will close this work session on House Bill 3392. Yeah. Colleagues, I regret to inform you, as I did by email last night, that it was wonderful not starting till 8:30 today, but on Wednesday we will need to come back at 8. We have a full agenda that day, but then we'll be back to 8:30 on Friday. Yes, sir, of course.
Will we get a chance to do something with the two things that I put up today?
I will consider it.
Thank you. That's all I'm asking. Thank you so much.
We'll be tomorrow. The vice chairs will be meeting with me, and we hope to map out the remainder of the session. Yes.
When you meet, maybe we could find a representative who still has a priority bill, because I think we need a task force on task forces.
I think there is a standing task force on task forces. Rep. Gilliam, isn't there?
Rep. Gilliam, I want to be on that.
Oh, yes. I didn't hire him.
Oh, you're the chair. Thanks, pal.
Okay. So, will the record show that?
If he can, if he wants. He can do it if he wants. Right. If you want to open a work session,
hydro.
For him to vote on
very
the nice. Can do that.
Have you adjourned
we'll
yet?
Record.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, no, I haven't. Yes.
No, not yet.
You want to vote?
We're agonizingly hanging on.
It is April Fool's Day, so should I take you at your word?
I would.
Should I move to suspend the rules?
Yes. Yeah, sure.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. I am going to open, colleagues, if you'll indulge me.
All of them?
Yeah. A concurrent work session.
You just have to open a work session, not on the bill.
Really? Okay. Yeah. All right, I'm opening a work session. Pick your bill. Vice Chair Huffman.
Mr. Chair, I move we suspend the rules and allow Vice Chair Harker to vote on, should I just go down the line one at a time?
No.
Can we do them?
We can do them at once, can't we?
Yeah, you can do them all.
On House Bill 2970, House Bill 2979, House Bill 3392, and House Bill 3296.
Okay, Vice Chair Huffman moves that the rules be suspended to allow Vice Chair Harker to vote on House Bill 2970, House Bill 2979, House Bill 3392, and House Bill 3296.
Is that going to change the outcome on those bills?
His vote will not affect the outcome of these votes. So you can vote however you'd like.
Any objection?
Is there any objection to our suspending the rules? Seeing none. Vice Chair Harker?
How would I like to vote?
How would you like to vote on House Bill?
I've got the numbers. Thanks. Aye.
Okay. Vice Chair Harker votes aye on all four bills. And I'm going to close the work session. Colleagues, before we commit any further mischief, we are adjourned.